In a world completely overrun by inane media, there are podcasts that rise above the rest. This is not one of those. Two middle-aged white guys from Middle America talk about random shit for about an hour or so. This is the Magical Talking Hatch.
Wait, that was the record button.
Okay.
So, now we are recording.
Good.
So, welcome everyone to the Magical Talking Hat podcast. The only podcast ever that Gore Vidal once said, and I quote, "It's the only reason I have left to get up in the morning."
Oh, God rest him.
And apparently our quality went downhill.
That was really to be expected.
Too soon, I think.
It's always too soon.
It's weird. I felt bad that he died. Like, I was like, oh. And then I read up on him more because I'm like, I don't really know much about him. And then I read up on him and I'm like, I really know nothing about him. So then I think I got to read some of his books. But, yeah. So, anyway, welcome to episode...
73.
Okay.
73.
We trained him, people. Took a little while, well, but we did train him.
I can't promise that this trend will continue. But
I'm Tony.
And I'm William.
And we have a magical hat. Check his own email. So you can write into that email with questions and topics, and we pull them out of the hat magically and randomly. And we talk about them until we're bored. Sometimes. Okay, all the time, but it takes a while. Sometimes. And I think today it may, because we were gone for 2 weeks. So,
and here's an important point.
Going on.
Here's an important point. We don't talk about them until you're bored.
No.
You
no,
could
no,
be
no.
bored, yes. Like 2 seconds into it.
Yes.
But we still may.
Alternatively,
talk about it.
You could be really interested, and we could be sick of it,
and we could stop.
So.
So you just don't know what's going to happen.
Really, this is not us making a podcast for you guys to enjoy. This is you guys listening to the podcast to make us feel better about what we're doing.
Because the thing is, the hat is going to have us doing this no matter what.
Yes.
And so,
in fact, what
we're
people
just
don't
sharing
know
our misery is what we're
for
doing.
For 3 years, we did this before we thought to record it. It was really stupid. We would just sit here and say out loud, "Oh, look, somebody run in." And then we're like, we should record this shit. No, it didn't happen. Also, Ezzy's here, but we're mad at her right now because she's in one of her not eating phases.
Oh.
She does this. She does it periodically, like every week or two. She just suddenly starts deciding she's not eating her cat food. She will try and eat your food, which normally she doesn't really do, but she'll do it when she's not eating. And then it's a matter of days, but eventually she gets hungry enough, she goes for it. And often it starts with her eating too much and throwing up. But then after that, she's back to normal. And she's right there for feeding, and she's all happy. And...
Well, it just doesn't seem that long ago that you said that she was...
Yeah. No, like I say, every week or two, she does it for a few days. It's really annoying.
Huh.
Anyway, yeah, so it's been 2 weeks.
2 weeks for us,
and a two-part episode. limited feedback on that. but the feedback we did get was not... approving of the concept.
Well,
so,
I wasn't
not
sure.
Not even so much that it was like stressful to them, just that it was sort of annoying.
Yeah. I kind of anticipated that, to be honest.
Also got a little pushback on the talking about porn so much, which I have to admit a little bit surprised me, because while I could understand if you just told somebody, "Hey, this coming up episode, they're going to talk about porn for a half hour," I can understand. You'd be like, "Dude, what the hell?" But I thought we actually had a kind of interesting, intelligent, and fairly tasteful conversation about the topic.
I thought so.
So I was a little bit surprised. But as usual, your comments are appreciated and will be completely ignored. So will you punch her in the throat or something?
Don't do that.
Yeah. That'll work.
Scratching up the furniture.
So, you had a Thursday off. It's been 2 weeks. How was your 2 weeks?
I was good. You know what? There was something that happened I was going to talk about. Now I don't remember what it was.
Seriously, it's probably the only thing that happened to you in 2 weeks.
No, there was something. Well, you know, I talked about I was going to go to see
your double feature,
Batman and Spider-Man, which I did.
Batman, Spider-Man.
But something else happened, and now I don't remember what it was.
All right.
And I was going to talk about it. But it probably doesn't matter because you also saw Batman, and so there's probably things to talk about in regard to that.
There are many, many things to talk about. Because I had a very eventful 2 weeks.
Oh, okay. Well, don't worry about what I did because it's boring anyway. So.
And then gives up.
If I remember later, I'll...
Well, as you know, I went on my vacation.
Yes.
With the family.
I was going to ask you how that went, but I figured you'd tell me.
It was a family vacation, so it was really fun and really crazy-making, and I had a great time, and I'm really glad it's over, you know? Like it is with the family vacation. Like,
yeah.
It was good.
Or any vacation, usually.
No. I could have never come back from the cruise, and that would have been okay.
Seriously? Because, I mean, I always come back from vacation feeling like I need another tiny vacation.
I have little bits of that, but the family ones especially, because it's just the right combination of, like, relaxation and then irritants that you don't normally have in your real life together, you know, so. But no, yeah, if they let me stay on the cruise, oh, man.
Well, why is that? Do you think that visiting family or having because a family visit is such a thing you can only take a little bit of?
Because, to a certain degree, since you are not seeing them on a regular basis, you revert to the relationship you had when you were younger. I see it. I really started witnessing it when I married the producer. Because she comes from a family of four children.
Mm-hmm.
And I see it in the others because I've interacted more with them in different circumstances. But I especially saw it in the producer. When she gets together with them, she becomes the kid older sister that she was. The youngest one becomes the baby. The brother becomes the troublemaker boy. The other sister becomes the good girl who does what the... Like, they revert back to that, and the parents revert back to their parenting mode.
Hmm.
As luck would have it, I appear to be some sort of long-lost, annoying sibling as well when we're there. I just fit in with the family, and so when we visit, it's like I'm a fifth kid.
Well, that makes it sound as though that the fact that everyone lives so far apart and they don't see each other very often, that's part of the problem.
Oh, yes, that's because, part of the fact.
Because usually what people will say is, the reason they live apart is because of the problems they experience when they're together. But what you're saying is the reason they experience these problems when they're together is because they live so far apart.
Theoretically, if you lived in the same house with those people and saw them and interacted with them every day, the relationship
would evolve.
Would evolve, exactly, and it would not be the same. Does that mean it would be successful? Not necessarily.
But it could be.
But I think the possibility is there. I think the main issue is that you had a relationship for a very long time, and it is essentially stuck at that point, at least in the day-to-day things, because you don't see them day-to-day.
That's very interesting.
That's my completely unsubstantiated theory.
Well, I think it has a lot of merit, because, as I said, some people insist that, well, you know, it's just because you don't get along with these people, but it's almost universal. People talk about going home, and they can't be there for very long, or they can't have visitors for very long. And I just can't believe that, you know, people who are family have to live apart.
Yeah.
It didn't used to be that way. And of course, some people that lived together, you know, back when families stayed together for a long time, sometimes they got along, sometimes they didn't.
Yeah.
But it wasn't consistently that they never got along.
There is a factor that there's a certain arbitrariness to being stuck with them. You didn't choose them.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I think there's a thing. And I think it's substantiated by the fact that my family, who I've always been very close to, love dearly, and I still do, and I still consider myself close to them. As time goes on, when we visit, it's weirder because we don't visit as much and we're so far away, and so our lives are our lives. And as time goes on, there's more of that. And I don't think that there's big fundamental changes in my family or in me that are causing that, but literally how we get along has changed.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's very interesting. That makes a lot more sense to me than just this, you know, notion that, oh, well, you know, you move away from your family for a reason and nobody wants to live with their family. It's like, I don't think that's it at all because that just doesn't make sense to me in the broader scheme of things.
Yes.
Your explanation makes more sense.
We should find out what our listeners think. Our listeners should go to the blog, themagicaltalkinghat.com, and tell us what you think. And maybe the producer will tell you what she thinks. Probably William won't tell you nothing, and I almost, as a point of pride now, don't bother to comment on there. But I do read them all and mock you verbally, just not on the computer. So, rest assured, you're not getting out of it. So I did that.
Yeah.
I finally finished your third book.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
I have completed the Grand Twilight Nerds trilogy. And I read all the little subsidiary and short story stuff except for one. Oh, man, she's doing full meerkat. Look at that.
Yeah, she is.
Oh, she does not do full meerkat very often.
What is her deal?
She heard a noise over there. I think Twiglet may be doing something. Wow.
Why does it take her... Does she do
wow,
it again?
She's doing it again! Trish, are you over there?
Where's over there?
Where Ezzy's headed?
Yep,
you just caused her to do full meerkat twice. Full meerkat. I haven't seen full meerkat in a long time.
That was strange.
What am I going to tell the Hatters?
You can comment about the nature of why family members are crazy making.
Yeah, I guess. Also, Tony hasn't told you that if you read a book in a 3-ring binder... Everyone wants.
Oh my god! I wanted to punch everybody in that rental house.
Why?
Because your book you gave to me as a PDF.
Yeah.
I printed it out, 3-hole punched it, put it in a 3-ring binder.
Oh yeah, that's right.
I'm on vacation with my family.
Mm.
We're all sitting around a vacation home. Most of us are reading a lot of the time.
Mm-hmm.
We're sitting there with books. There are books sitting all over the place. People pick them up and they read them again. And every once in a while, people see the cover and they're like, oh, that looks interesting. What's that? Or, oh, I've read that before. Things like that. Something about it being in a notebook. Everybody, all the time, every day, what is that you're reading? And I would say, a book. And then Uncle Bobby, who's the uncle named Bobby, got into a whole damn thing about, because it was yours and you had self-published and did, and he basically wanted to give me a ton of advice, I think, on how you should publish it with a real publishing house.
Yeah, right.
But the problem is he was trying to sort of segue his way in there, and so he'd say things like, did he shop it around to publishers? And I'm like, I don't think so. I think he just did it himself. And finally he's like, well, does he want to get it published? And I said, no, I don't think that's why he did it, for commercial success. And that just cut him short, which was nice. But one day I even bitched about reading out of the notebook, and then like 30 seconds later somebody came in and said, so what are you reading? And then I punched them and now I'm out of the family.
It might be me, because you did rip my head off one
time. Well, you should fucking know better.
I thought it might be gaming shit. I didn't know.
Yeah. What's funny is she talks as though if that were the answer she would somehow be interested then. Either way, nah.
Sorry to display interest in your life, dear.
It's okay. You'll know better next time.
And there she goes.
There she goes.
Obviously, producing our show is a pretty low work kind of thing. I mean, she can just walk out the door. And
by producer, I mostly mean that she's the one in charge of allowing us to do this once a week. In fact, this show is the reason why I can only play one role-playing game a week.
Oh, really?
Because when I changed it, it was every 2 weeks, and now it's every week. And I asked her if that was okay, and she said, all right, but this is the last, like, major social commitment, regular social commitment you get to do without me. You've got the podcast every week, you've got gaming every week, and I'm not involved in either, so. Yeah, so I finished your book. And we talked about it some on...
Yeah, you sent me some comments.
The email.
About it, yeah.
Do you want to talk at all about it on the show?
Well, I don't know.
I was pleased with the book. I was more pleased with it as a book than as an ending for the series. I felt I needed a little more closure than I got.
I get that a lot. A lot of people are
dissatisfied. Well, especially with the epilogue really sounds like you're setting up for another book.
I know it does.
Are you setting up for another book?
No.
Then what the fuck is wrong with you?
I don't know. I don't know. I'm really not. Although I could.
You really could.
And it might be fun, but.
And there was some really fascinating stuff that got put together in this. Has some of my... it has absolutely my favorite dialogue sequences in the series.
Oh, that's good.
Well, I'm telling you, you can just write a book
just about, with people talking.
About Victor and Bridget having a road trip for some reason. Make it like one of those bad buddy comedy movies. Like, they've got 4 days to get cross-country to... You know, that Bridget and Victor talking, like, just kills so much time with that. And had some very moving passages. I can see the maturity of your writing in this compared with the first one.
Right.
That being said, I still think the first one is my favorite of the three.
Well, I really need to... What's interesting is I spent more money getting it professionally edited, and when I read it again, I found so many mistakes.
Yeah.
Because, when I had it professionally edited, I didn't really edit it much myself. I kind of accepted that they knew what they were doing. So, and I mean, there's even words that are used wrong. I don't even know how that happened, but...
Well, and I feel bad because I was heavily, in my opinion at least, heavily involved in the editing of the first one.
Right, but you...
Because I went through it and gave you comprehensive notes twice on
that
one.
Right.
And I did it once on the other one, and this one, we weren't able to make that sort of work. And I feel bad about that because
I didn't really expect
a whole project.
I didn't really expect people to... In the first one, I had several people read it, but I didn't expect them to edit it because I was going to pay someone to do that, and I did.
Yeah.
And I had it edited twice, even. Paid twice to have it
edited.
I feel
like professional editing isn't the same, though.
I guess it's not, because...
I mean, I don't think it's just copy editing. I think there's more to it than that. But
yeah,
with your friends and with people who have gone through... Like, you can get a lot about... I feel like your vision for this is X, based on having read these and what I know about you.
Mm-hmm.
And yet it doesn't come up, you know. And there is some stuff like that. And there's stuff. A lot of... There were a lot of I don't remember if I mentioned this in the email... There were a lot of character things I noticed in this one that seemed like unrealistic character reactions to me, except that I knew you wrote it. And so I totally saw that they seemed like reasonable character, realistic character reactions by you. And it's also fascinating, if you spend enough time with William and hear him talk philosophy, it's fascinating to read these books because he gives... the same philosophical concepts and questions to these characters. And so I'm pretty sure in this series, I have read characters have conversations that you and I have more or less had.
Yeah, probably.
And that was really weird.
The thing about this particular book is that I had fewer... the first and the second book, both I had a lot of... my friends read it and give me feedback before I published it. This one, hardly at all, because, you didn't have time to give me feedback, and there was another friend that didn't either. I had one other friend read it twice and give a lot of heavy editing and feedback on it, and that was about it.
Well, I think there was more jump at it the first one, because it's like, dude, you wrote a novel, but now we're like, yeah, it's your third novel.
Well,
and to be fair... there was a lot of grunt work that had to be done in terms of editing in your first one, because it was your first book.
Oh, yeah.
That kind of stuff wasn't here. I mean, I don't know if some of that got cleaned up by the people who did edit it.
But oh, well, I mean...
The things that I would... Well, and that I have said to you are much more fine-tuning. In the original one, there was... stuff that, like, this flat out doesn't make
no,
sense.
No, that's
this,
right.
This scene is a mess. Like, there was nothing like that.
No, in the first book I did like 3 or 4 total rewrites.
Yeah, yeah. Largely, my issues here are much more fine-tuned, much more, in some cases, intuitive and nebulous and not technical. And in a lot of cases, subjective. Stuff that I wanted out of it. Mm-hmm. As I'm learning recently, I have certain expectations of the ending of a trilogy and the final arc of a story. And sometimes I get disappointed.
Well, you know, an interesting thing, and I won't give away what happens, but something that happens at the very end with one of the characters, you were saying that it seemed sort of
tacked on.
And that's interesting because ever since I decided to have this character in the second book, I knew that this was how it was going to end.
Well,
and it's funny, it doesn't seem like that. It's funny that it seems not that way at all, but I just...
Well, and you know, there are things about that, too. At a certain point, this series became the story of a particular character.
Yeah, that's right.
Who's ultimately not the main character of the series.
That's right.
And yet it's a story about that character. And so here's the thing. Right. Knowing her... Oh, spoiler, her, not him. Knowing her, that made sense for the character. It didn't make sense for the narrative to me.
But see, it was explained in a conversation that two people had before. Well, I won't get into that too much. But they did. There was something that was said between two characters elsewhere in the book that was supposed to help you kind of get a handle on
what's going on. Well, this goes to your minimalism again, because there are a few things that I felt didn't have proper support. That I know for a fact had very specific conversations that were supposed to support it, and they just didn't seem like enough.
No, and you're right. That happens in all three of them. There's, you know, I can say, well, this was mentioned here and here and here, so it didn't come out of nowhere. But as you point out rightly, I think, well, that's not enough. I mean, you have to really, you know, you really have to flesh it out, and that's why I have people read it ahead of time, because I can usually be happy with, well, this explains this here. Oh, no, that's not enough. And then I can kind of figure out ways to pepper it through.
Also, when in doubt, assume a character is black. I have learned this.
Well, I like to have people of color and in my work.
I think it must just be my own... Well, sometimes I think it's my own inherent racism. Sometimes I go back and look at the descriptions and I'm like, no, dude, they were black in your head, but that's not necessarily what you wrote here. This is a whole Dumbledore is gay thing. Yeah, like, it doesn't necessarily...
Yeah.
But then there are some that I'm like, I don't know how I missed that.
Well, I don't spend a lot of time dwelling on it, especially if it's a particular, you know, the narrative is, what do they call it? Third person perfect or something where it's in third person, but it's kind of from the perspective of
third person omniscient.
Yeah. Well, basically. Yeah. From a perspective of one of the characters. Yeah. And if I don't think that it's within the character's idiom to really pay attention to things like race, then it won't be really highlighted.
And we don't appear to have any racist characters anymore.
Well, and in this story, Evelyn is just very observant in general, so she makes a lot of notes about a particular meeting and stuff and the racial and gender makeup of it, because that she just pays attention to things.
And I was like, there was some stuff I told you about a dialogue sequence that actually, like, I was fairly moved, and it snuck up on me. I didn't expect myself to be, and that's major to your credit.
Well, I'm really glad that worked, because that was critical for her character and for what happened.
And I feel like I even walked into that knowing what you were going for and not thinking it was going to work.
Yeah.
Something in your turn of phrase or something did it. But anyway, it's an incredibly thought-provoking series, and it's a good read, and it's a pretty fast read. So I would highly recommend all the Twilight Nerds books. And they really are a comprehensive tale. So they work if you think of them as one big book. Which, theoretically, they will be.
Yeah, I'll probably
have an omnibus.
Yeah.
Okay.
But at first I have to fix all the problems. I mean, I want to sort of reissue the first book without all of the ridiculous mistakes. And then I want to put them together.
Yeah. Okay, we need to get moving. We got a lot of shit here. Okay, so I finished that. I read another book called Deus Irae, I guess you would say. It's Latin, and it's Deus, and then the second word is I-R-A-E. And I believe it translates to God of Wrath. But I don't know how to pronounce that second word so well. Picked it up in a used bookstore. Fascinating. It is a sci-fi novel, post-apocalyptic sci-fi novel, co-authored by Philip K. Dick and Roger Zelazny.
Jeez.
To me, that's just, yeah, I was like, I don't know anything about this, but I'm buying this book and I'm reading this book.
Yeah.
And I did not think it through.
What do you mean?
Because it was written in 1976.
Okay.
It was Philip K. Dick and Roger Zelazny.
Yeah.
It is full of that intense, very Zelazny-esque, very Philip K. Dick-esque, and very 1970s speculative fiction-esque psychedelic pretension is the best phrase I can come up with. It's full, it's a post-apocalyptic book in which every character is incredibly learned in philosophy and quotes German poetry all the time. And there are lots of course, drug trips and psychedelic dreams. But then there are also scenes that you keep expecting to turn out to be those that are just scenes. That just happens. And it's just such intense navel gazing. I'm not going to say I don't recommend it. Because it was very thoughtful. It was very fascinating in terms of its look at religion. Because the whole idea behind it is that it's post-apocalyptic and Christianity has lost a lot of followers because people have been like, dude, the apocalypse happened. Clearly the Christians were wrong because God has to be an asshole. And basically a religion gets built up around the concept that God is an asshole and that in fact he is specifically the guy who's responsible for the attack that basically caused the apocalypse. And so there are these two different faiths and this one guy who sort of gets caught in the middle when he has to go on a pilgrimage to find the asshole God because he has to paint a mural of him. And hijinks ensue. And so it deals a lot with concepts of religion, concepts of Christianity, the purpose of religion, and that kind of stuff. And it is very thought-provoking. But what I will say is it is very 70s, and it is a very difficult read.
What caused the apocalypse?
War. Just it's war. Basically nuclear war shit. But this in particular, this guy did some bomb that basically poisoned the atmosphere. And so it was a slow death that killed off just about everybody. Just in the whole world. Which is why he's considered a wrathful asshole god. But yeah, it was very weird. And now I'm reading a collection of short stories by Arthur C. Clarke that I'm enjoying immensely. I'm in a weird place that for the first time in months, I don't have anything I'm supposed to be reading. So that's weird. I also finished Mass Effect 3.
Oh, you did?
Yes. And I was very pleased with the ending. I played, for those of you in the know, I played the original ending, not the extended ending. And I have since read up on all the different possible endings, both original and extended. I'm pretty sure I prefer the original endings to the extended ones.
There was quite a bit of controversy about that.
Yes, I appear to be in the minority.
I don't know anything about it, but I know there was controversy.
What it largely comes down to is the game ends without explaining everything. The game ends in a way that Westerners frequently can't stand, where you don't really know how everything goes.
And like, so like my third book, you mean?
Yeah. Well, third book, you're just being an asshole. It has an ending, and then you have one of those post-credits set up for a sequel for no reason. Literally, think about it. You could eliminate the epilogue. And given you're not writing another book,
I know,
nothing would change.
What would be the fun in that?
You heard it here first, folks. William writes novels to be an asshole. But anyway.
I think I do.
And the extended version that they were basically shamed into does things where, like, they have NPCs narrate fairly explicitly what happens to society and the galaxy at the end, in case you were worried. And you get to see little epilogue scenes of what happened to all the characters and stuff. Whereas before, it was really, a lot of it was left very open-ended. And I was genuinely moved by the end of this video game in a way that video games don't do for me, and that most movies haven't done.
Mm-hmm.
This had a serious emotional impact on me, mm-hmm. and I think a large amount of it was the uncertainty, because I had so much stress and anxiety and hope and fear mm-hmm. about what might gonna be happen,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Which is the worst phrase I may have ever said. What might gonna be happen?
It's good though.
I kind of like.
We should use it more often.
What might gonna be happen?
What might gonna be happen?
And there are those of us, but I believe we are in the minority. But there are those of us who are like, yeah, I prefer the original ending. But very good game, very good series of games. Play them. Play all three of them in order. Because they literally tie into each. I mean, literally the save file.
And on the same platform.
On the same platform, you need to do that. So there's that. And last night, I went and saw Dark Knight Rises.
Yeah.
And you saw it
yes.
earlier.
Yes.
Let's talk a little bit about that, shall we?
Okay.
What did you think of The Dark Knight Rises?
Well, as I think I explained.
Well, let's back up.
Yeah.
Batman Begins. What did you think of that?
Batman Begins? Mm-hmm. Oh, well, as a matter of fact, we watched Batman Begins and Dark Knight, like, you know, the night before.
Yes.
And the whatever.
And in very general terms, because we don't want to dwell on old movies too much.
Right, but
how do you feel?
I just remember watching Batman Begins and thinking, man, this is such a good movie. I just forgot how awesome this was and how great it was to see it in the theater. And then, of course, Dark Knight was, you know, excellent. I don't prefer Dark Knight over Batman Begins, but I do like the Joker's character and everything. I think that's
great. I still feel like I prefer Dark Knight over Batman. When I've gone back to Batman Begins, it doesn't hold up entirely. I think Batman Begins gets a lot of points for being groundbreaking.
Yeah.
I feel like it did what a movie of its type didn't do before. Now, looking at it, I see other flaws, but still a great movie.
I really like
that movie.
For some reason, I prefer the first one over the second one, but I do like the second one. And the Joker in that one is, I mean, in any form that the Joker's ever been portrayed, to me, that's the best. I still feel good about the first two films, and I was very excited to get to watch them again before we went to watch the third one. Although, I can't say that watching them like that and then going to watch the third one enhanced my watching of the third one.
I wondered. The producer thought it might because, whatever we're going to say opinion-wise, Dark Knight Rises is not a standalone film.
No.
In any way.
No.
It very much takes stuff from the second and even from the first.
Right.
And the whole sort of setup for the third, you very much have to sort of be aware what was going on
at
the end of the second.
That's right.
And the producer did not remember real well.
Yeah, well.
She had some troubles with that.
Here's the thing. While I was watching, I felt like, oh, well, I'm glad that we watched the first two films because that's nice. They're making reference to these things. That said, I also had fresh in my mind how excellent the first two films were, how well they went together, and how much anticipation they made for the third installment, and I think I'd sooner not have had that. Because I think I could have remembered stuff well enough.
Yeah.
But to have the fresh experience of how great these two films were and how well they were put together and both went together so well, and then the third one, really, in my opinion, and I would have to see it again because I have this experience with Nolan films in general. I usually like them better as I watch them more often. And also, and when I was in the theater, the sound was horrible, so I think there were plot points and stuff that I didn't understand or that I didn't completely get. But overall, my impression on leaving, my first impression, was not entirely positive, especially in comparison with the first two films.
My choice phrase I have come up with for my reaction is severely disappointed. The producer's key word in the process that she stands by is sloppy.
Well, oh yeah, absolutely that. It was really weird. I walked out thinking, I can't believe that the Nolan brothers, you know, had anything to do with this story because it did not seem as complicated or well thought out. Look at what they've done.
I sat up in my seat when the credits started because I was sure somebody else did the screenplay for this one.
No,
I was like,
they
directed, but no, they did. They did. You're absolutely right. But I thought there was no way.
Look at Memento. Look at all their movies. Every
single one.
Look
at Batman Begins at Dark Knight.
Batman Begins at Dark Knight. Inception. Complex. The great thing about Nolan is I don't know how he does it because he really puts more in a film than anyone has a right to, than anyone should. And yet somehow it works. Yeah. I mean, I watch sometimes his films and I'm thinking, this is moving way too fast. He's trying to do way too much, but it doesn't fall apart or fail. Somehow, he has this ability to make it so tight that in a very small period of time, you can have like three scenes and people saying completely different things, and it shouldn't work, but it does.
Yeah, but except here.
Well, this film, again, and I'd have to watch it again to be sure, because again, I feel like I've missed some things. But it didn't seem like, first of all, that it was very... The idea wasn't original in terms of the series. I won't give away what the plot is, but it was very...
No, because I did what I usually do. I looked up all about the characters from this and found out that, yeah, they totally... Very little ties into these characters. Well, okay, everybody knows Bane is the main villain in this one. I read up on Bane. Very little about Bane from his entire run of comic books, including alternate ones and stuff, matches what happened in this movie.
That's right.
There are a couple of things, but they're very limited, including his stupid face mask thing. That thing was awful, and I was like, well, they probably have to. No! He doesn't have that in the comics. No. What is that about?
Well, see, but the plot itself is somewhat recycled, and
somewhat predictable.
Well, there's weird philosophical things going on in terms of, I mean, I don't think I can talk about it without giving away spoilers.
Yeah, this is going to be spoiler-free, people.
But there's
huge
a lot of...
Huge movie. And honestly, I'm not going to say it's a bad film. My issues are as the final film in what has been an incredible trilogy.
Yes, exactly.
It is still better than Green Lantern. It's arguably better than Thor.
Yeah.
It's better than... Definitely the third X-Men.
Well, but the problem is when you have a straight A student and they come home with a B.
Exactly.
That could be really, it's a B, but it's so disappointing. And yeah, there were a lot of problems with it. And I'd have to see it again to make sure that I'm not just missing something. But I had another friend of mine sent me an email about it, and she was bothered by some of the story implications in terms of social hierarchies and gender politics and things. It's like, wow. Those things bothered me too. And I thought, this just doesn't seem like something Nolan would
The class do. Struggle aspect is very
weird.
Yeah, right. The gender politics was ridiculous. And here's the thing. The producer was claiming to sort of blame Anne Hathaway's performance on that. I don't think so. Catwoman was a throwaway character, in my opinion.
Well,
and reviews are saying how she's the most dynamic. Technically, that's true.
Yeah.
It was a throwaway character. Not only was she not an interesting character to me, she could have been eliminated from the script and the movie would have been about the same.
It's funny you say that, because I said the exact same thing to who I went to the film with. I said, you know what? You could cut this film together without any of her scenes and you probably wouldn't even miss her.
No character was... Bane was interesting... in his mannerism, in the performance, but the character ended up completely flat. And having read up on the real one, that's a huge waste.
Yeah.
The plot was dumb. I'm gonna be honest. It was very, very. It was the plot they needed to get their metaphor across.
I guess.
Like, it was just so heavy-handed, in my opinion.
Yeah.
No moment. And it was bad enough that at the end, as these things do, there's twists, and there are some big twists at the end, because that's how you do these kind of things. And I'll admit, I didn't see some of those twists coming. When they showed up, I did not care.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, it's really this? Oh, okay.
All right.
So, stuff that didn't make sense, and here's the biggest thing. Technically, it was a mess. The sound quality, you said you were in a bad theater.
Yeah, I'm sure.
I don't think it was as bad as you think it was, because the sound was absolute shit. And I'm not just talking about Bane, who apparently originally was so bad they had to re-record literally all of his dialogue, who still sucked. I only got about half of what Bane ever said, but I only got about a quarter of what other people said.
Huh.
Yeah, the sound quality was atrocious. And for the money they put on that, this is ridiculous. And the editing was jumpy. Mm. And they didn't sync up the sound and the visuals in a lot of places. The music in the party scene that they were dancing to was not synced up with their dancing. The chanting, which occurs in several places, was not synced up with the guys who we were watching chanting.
Yeah, well,
I mean, I know nothing about how to do this, and in the amount of time they took to make that movie, I could have learned to do it better than they did.
Well, like I said, there's very little in this film that if you saw it and you weren't told it was a Nolan film, you wouldn't guess it was.
And there are definite character decisions and interactions in this that flat out make no sense to me, including ones that I saw a mile away. There's some stuff near the end where somebody does something, and I could tell we were trying to be dramatic, and I'm like, this person is about to go do XYZ. I know they're going to do that, even though it makes absolutely no sense. And you know what? They did XYZ. And I'm I knew that was happening.
But again, am I right? This is not a Nolan... I mean...
No, like I told you, I was convinced somebody else wrote it.
Well, I was almost convinced someone else directed it. I knew it was. I knew he and his brother did write it, and I knew he did direct it, but I couldn't believe it.
I feel a little less bad about the direction because I still feel that there were very strong performances in this film.
Well, sure, but...
And I can give this film credit in that somebody today, I happen to be listening to something talking about it today, mentioned that it's 2 hours and 40 minutes. And I did not feel like I sat through 2 hours and 40 minutes.
True.
Which is a major complaint I have had against a lot of movies recently. Yeah. So
I liked Hathaway's performance. I felt bad that the character wasn't better.
Yeah, no, I think Hathaway did okay. It was just such a throwaway character. And had the potential to be so much better. So here's the thing, people. I at least, I can't speak for William. I am not telling you not to see this. It's a good movie. I really do think it is. Someday I may even feel like watching it again, long down the road. It's not a great movie, and it's not at all... See, I planned this line for... It may have been the trilogy conclusion that they needed, but not the one they deserved.
Not the one we deserved.
Not the one we deserved. Well, so, I mean, it's just a severe disappointment. It's not a bad movie. It's just so not up to par with the other two.
But I will say this, even after this movie, that, I'm a Batman fan, long time. And I also appreciate Batman as a cultural icon. I'm one of those people that reads a lot of books about Batman as an icon and what Batman means and how Batman's changed over the years. I take a very academic perspective and philosophical perspective on Batman, and I've actually given this a lot of thought, and as someone who likes film and likes to take comic books into film, I've actually given a lot of thought to how Batman could be done and should be done in film. And it's my opinion that if you're going to do Batman and your goal is to make a plausible story, as plausible as you can make it, I don't think anyone could have done a better job than Nolan did.
You mean in the whole set?
In the whole thing.
Because that's the thing. If you ask me to rate the trilogy, I still rate it pretty high.
Well, mostly
because of those first
two. I'm not just saying in terms of it being a film and comparing it to other films. I'm saying if I sat down and tried to make a plausible story, I might change some things. Like, I would do a lot of different things with Bane, for example.
Yeah, yeah.
I would have integrated Catwoman better. I would have done different things with Two-Face, even, in the second film.
Yeah,
but all of those things are fairly minor. Overall, if you're going to make a Batman film and your aim is to make it as plausible as you possibly can, and it's only so plausible it can be,
yes,
with a guy running around as a bat, I don't think anyone could have done a better job.
Yeah.
Than Nolan did, and anyone who makes films in the future and try and attempt the same thing, they might make films as good, possibly as good, but I don't think better.
And I think he told a Batman story and maybe even a superhero story, the likes of which no one's ever been able to manage before.
I agree, and
it was dark, it was compelling, it was real, and yet it wasn't. It was still a four color comic book story,
right?
Because that's the thing, people either have to be big and four color, or they have to get really gritty and they have to get all, you know, right, nasty and stuff. He managed to do both, and it was just so compelling. And I was just so disappointed.
Yeah, it's just too bad that the last film couldn't have been as
strong. And the thing is, I feel like, I mean, this really needed a good ending. Like, there was so much potential here. And I feel like they grasped for it. That's where I see Nolan. I see what I think they were trying to do.
Mm-hmm.
And it's ambitious and it's impressive.
Mm-hmm.
I just feel like he failed. But now I'm like, I'm willing to take Batman Begins and Dark Knight and say that's the end of the story.
Well,
and I think that's still a very compelling story.
I do have to say this. The way he ended it, I think, is also the only way any plausible style Batman story can be told. I won't say how it ends, but I haven't heard people's response to how it ended, if they're disappointed or if they think it could have been a different way. But I really don't think he could have ended it any other way.
I think there are certain aspects of what you're saying that I very much agree with. Certain aspects of that sentence also make me want to scream and punch you in the face.
No, the ultimate end of it.
I know.
Not so much how the ending happened.
That's the thing. Yeah, I'm like, there are certain bits of it that I hope are what you're talking about. That I agree with
you
on.
If we could discuss it openly without causing spoilers, I think we would agree on what I'm saying.
When we turn off this thing, we'll work it out, people. It'll be fine then.
But I think a lot of people will... I don't know. I haven't heard people respond to the end. It's an ending that I think a lot of people would object to. But I think, again, if you're going to make a plausible story, I don't see how you could possibly have ended it any other
way. And also, people, if you loved it, I freely admit, I am in the minority here. It's getting huge reviews.
Yeah, it's doing well.
I read the AV Club's review today.
Oh, and they liked it.
They gave it an A-, first of all.
Oh.
But reading it, I feel like we saw a different movie. I feel like we saw a completely different film.
And again, maybe if I watch it again and I can hear things better, maybe I'll have a different opinion.
Dude,
I don't know.
I'm telling you, I don't know how possible that is.
Well,
there was nothing wrong with the sound in our theater. It was a mess.
We'll see.
Yeah. All right. We have less than 15 minutes.
Oh.
So
this always happens when we're gone for 2 weeks.
We also don't have a time limit, so we can go over. But let's take one question and see what we can come up with.
Okay. Oops.
If you would like to write the hat, and maybe in a different episode, we might actually address more than one issue from it, you should at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. For those of you listening for the first time, we usually only spend 30 minutes talking about bullshit before we start talking about your bullshit. This time, we spent longer because of that movie.
Well, that typically happens when we've
been gone for 2 weeks.
Anyway.
And this time there was too much stuff. There was your book. There was Mass Effect 3. There was that movie.
Vacation.
We aren't even talking about Spider-Man.
No. Which was a disappointment also. But anyway. Dear the Magical Talking Hat, fan fiction, yay or nay? From Kia B.
Oh, Kia B. All right. Fan fiction. I approve of fan fiction as a concept. I like the idea. I think it gets taken too far. Both in terms of trying to tie it in. Like, some people take some fan fiction too seriously. I think fan fiction needs to continue to be experimental. You need to not try and reconcile it with canon. and also, I have seen people who are obsessed with fan fiction to the point that it becomes like people who are addicted to a massively multiplayer online game. The difference is they're just writing and becomes, well, you've heard the concept, I suppose, of something being very Mary Sue.
Mm-hmm.
That's the thing. People write fan fiction that are basically, what if I got to hang out with all these cool characters? And, you know, what if I got to date Edward Cullen? And I don't have a problem with it. It's all creative expression, and I'm fine with that.
Well, I don't see conceptually a difference between fan fiction and fiction that other people write. You know, like all of the Star Wars fiction that's written by anyone other than George Lucas.
You don't see a difference between the expanded universe stuff and just outright Star Wars
fiction. Conceptually speaking, I don't see a difference.
We're not talking. Yeah, okay.
Obviously, there. Well, I don't know how obvious it is, but I think in practice there's going to be obvious, you know, quality differences.
Well, and
you're going to have people that don't write very well writing some things.
And Twilight tentacles probably do more things in fan fiction than they do in expanded universe.
I suppose, but. And speaking as an author myself,
of fan fiction?
No.
Yeah.
I would love it if anyone who is a fan of my stuff wrote their own stuff.
Oh, it's screaming for Twilight and fan fiction.
I mean, you know, you talk about how, well, the end of the third book kind of sets up.
Yeah,
for,
somebody write the next story, yeah, please.
That'd be great. I'd love that.
William's an asshole.
I mean, you know, it wouldn't bother me at all. I'd like it even better if I thought, you know, it followed some of the rules of the universe that I set up or whatever. I would like it better if it did that, but it doesn't have to. I don't care.
I find this kind of thing interesting because this, and oddly enough, because we were talking about comic books, and this comes up a lot in comic books where people either take over a character in terms of writing or do a spin-off. And in a certain way, I sometimes view these as fan fiction. I read Mike Carey, who was a comic book author for many years and also now has written some novels that I've read that I like, sort of first gained real prominence because he wrote the series Lucifer, which is a spinoff from Neil Gaiman's Sandman series.
Mm-hmm.
And ended up being of the same length, actually. They were both 11 trades long. And there's some talk about that, and apparently, because Neil Gaiman, when Sandman was huge, Neil Gaiman and Neil Gaiman's people, and the people who actually had the rights, were approached many times about the idea of taking a character from the Sandman universe and doing another story with it. Welcome back, producer.
Thanks.
We went 46 minutes and change before we actually drew anything out of the hat.
I'm surprised that you drew anything at all.
Hey.
You had a lot of things to talk
we
about.
We did, and we even left some out.
Yeah, we left a lot.
I got another one for you.
We aren't going to have time. And it came up a lot, and people would sort of ask him and so forth, and he generally didn't have a lot of answers. And apparently was very sort of intrigued, because Mike Carey came up with it on his own to do Lucifer as one. And I thought that series became amazing. I mean, and it's... I hesitate to say, I don't want to say it was as good as Sandman, but it was close. Lucifer series was really fucking impressive.
You often tell me that.
I was very pleased with it.
Yeah, the first few you could loan.
I have like the first five. I could loan them to you. I thought about loaning you that book I was talking about earlier. You have what for me? What are these?
Treats. Well, one's for William.
What are these?
They're plums. Don't bite too down too hard. Just stick it in your mouth, though.
Plums.
I'm skeptical.
It's a plum.
But it's small. It's going to be sour.
Is this from the tree over there?
No, it's not sour at all. No, I have a secret stash.
It's not sour at all. It's like the size of a grape. It is not sour at all. No,
well,
it's
what's
good.
The pit like? Is it hard?
Yeah, there's. Watch out for the pit.
But I just put them all in my mouth and then spit the pit out, but whatever.
Oh, how can it
really
be like that?
Good. I don't know.
Odd.
It's definitely... Holy shit!
What kind of plum is it?
I have no idea.
Very small.
Where the fuck did you get those?
I was driving one day in an undisclosed location, and I thought, hey, that looks like a plum tree. And so today I thought, you know, plums should be ripe.
You didn't trespass, did you?
No.
Okay.
And I found out it's actually like a stand of plum trees.
That's really good. They're very small. They're like the size of a grape. And it's definitely a plum in flavor, but it reminds me very much of when I was younger, my grandparents had like one row of wine grapes. They had like muskets. And it tastes like that to me. Very nice, though.
Yeah, not bad.
That's good. Yeah, and way sweeter than you'd think it would be. But yeah, so I feel like this comes up sometimes, and you can get some really amazing stuff. And to put it in a from the sublime to the ridiculous, 50 Shades of Grey, the hit book series right now, supposedly started life as Twilight fanfiction.
Well, that's really sad.
For a lot of reasons.
Well, you know, the first time I really noticed a character that was really popular that had limited exposure in its original source was Boba Fett. Because huge fans of Boba Fett.
Yeah.
And of course, that made George Lucas really feature him more heavily in the...
He had that whole story worked out already.
So when I wrote my stories, I thought it was cool to have characters that I didn't really say much about. Because I thought it would be neat if anyone reading my books, if they were fans, if they hooked on to a particular character, and if I gave them just enough information about that character that they liked them, but not enough that they were satisfied with how much the character showed up in the story, and then they could do whatever they wanted with them.
But sometimes you couldn't resist temptation.
What do you mean?
Sometimes you had to bring them back.
Yes, that's true, because Victor was one of those characters that I just thought, oh, I'll just make him really mysterious.
Sometimes you had to bring him back and they were awesome, and sometimes you had to bring him back and it was a little silly.
Well, I'm sorry that you didn't like how Victor was brought back.
No, I loved how Victor was brought back. Oh. I gave you shit for June and Todd.
Oh, well, I didn't think that was...
And I'll tell you why, and this is where I get really...
I didn't think that was silly at all.
No, but this is where I get really nerdy. Not only
was
it...
Todd
was
even filling in.
But not only was it just a silly throwaway cameo, but then I got into the very nature of how that organization would work. There's no way that in that period of time they would have achieved that level. That was the thing. Like, I got you from geeky ways as to why that was not right. You probably, and you just thought you were being cute.
Well, I was being cute. Some
of the other cameos, though, were fucking impressive.
He was going to come back in a different way.
And Victor was awesome. But Victor, that was so weird.
Todd was going to come back.
Speaking of which, the interrogation scene, which is all I'll call it, also fucking brilliant. And way, I would never have thought you could have pulled that shit off.
Why?
It's just not your, I don't know. Like, it's just not, I've never seen you write anything like that. But you are a filmmaker, and that was such a film scene. But I was just loving that. And especially the bit about getting the book or whatever. And it's like, why? Well, this is his house. That may have been a different interrogation scene. But there was the bit where he walks back in and they're like, where are you going? You're like, oh, this is his house.
Yeah, right. Well,
I think I laughed out loud when that happened.
I don't know. What about it? Did you think sounded like it? Because it was a little bit. Because it's a little bit comical. You mean, or?
And it's a little action movie-y.
Oh, well,
it's not.
I guess it is.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I was gonna say no offense, but it pretty much is insulting by telling you that. But no, I was. It surprised me, and it was awesome.
Did you just compare Williams' books to an action movie?
No, I compared scenes in Williams' book.
One scene.
To a good action movie.
William, I'm so sorry.
This is some Reservoir Dog shit we got going on here. Well, except in no way is that disturbing and violent and shit, people. Not at all. But Quentin Tarantino would appreciate those scenes, I think.
Well, the interesting thing
he would make them bloodier and somebody's hand would get shot off.
I suppose, but actually it had, because of things that developed later, the scene had to be that way. I mean, it wasn't just for effect. I mean,
but it was also hilarious.
Okay, well, that's good to know. So, I guess for me, to answer the question, yay or nay, I mean, as an author, I put things in my books that I think are interesting, that I could write more about, but that I deliberately don't. Because that's just the way I write. But I'm also interested to know if someone sees something in the story they really like. And, you know, like Lethan in the first... book.
I was waiting for him to show up because somebody mentioned him. I'm like, yes, we're gonna get Lethan back, and then he didn't, and I'm like, fuck you.
Bridget did.
I wouldn't even have thought. I know, and I'm like, I wouldn't even have thought of
but
him.
But Bridget was in the first book.
Was she really?
Well, not in it. She was in a portrait in Lethan's house,
oh.
And she was also in the council. She complained about that in the third book about being.
Oh, I do remember serving here in the council. He does lots of cameos from both of the first books.
But no, Bridget was in the. Brian was admiring her portrait, and then in the scene where he's in the council, she's in the council, and Lethan's right behind her, like pointing at her, you know, while Brian's trying to work. So she's been in She actually showed up in the
first book. I also feel like Bridget was a little bit of window into certain aspects of your personality that some of us might not.
I don't know about that.
I think we might have gotten just a little glimpse of William's OkCupid profile in the creation of Bridget.
No, I don't think
there
so.
There was just... Because that's the thing, is you don't write erotic sensualist stuff.
No, I don't.
But the closest you have ever come was writing about her.
Well, and I really had fun.
And not even just in one place, in several places.
No, I know. I had fun writing about...
And by the way, in no way am I complaining. You wrote well.
I liked especially writing about... Roger, a character in the book. I liked his reaction to her. I really liked writing that a lot.
That was good because it was like so weird and yet felt so natural at the same time. Like, I in no way related to him and yet I could see it. Like, it was very interesting.
Yeah, I liked writing his reaction to her most.
I couldn't sympathize, but I could empathize very well. Like, or if I got him backwards, I always do that.
But anyway, yeah, I really liked Bridget's character. And the thing is, I developed enormous amounts of backstory for her. And it didn't really get in the book, of course, but I just really had to think about her a lot to write anything about her at all, it seemed like. That's one of the things that took a long time.
And she was something of a side character. I was a little disappointed in that. So I think the answer to your question, Kia, is read William's books. Because clearly that's the direction we've gone here. No, I think the answer is, conceptually, we're both very much in favor of fan fiction.
Absolutely.
But we reserve the right to completely decry and outright burn any specific instances of fan fiction that we come across, because sometimes it's a terrible, terrible thing.
Well, another thing I can say about fan fiction is, as someone who recently has had what I think are fairly pretty solid ideas about Wonder Woman and Buck Rogers and stuff, I do not want to do them as fan fiction. I absolutely do not want to. And I won't, probably. But it's a shame that, you know, I can't make these ideas come to fruition some other way. Because
I always personally want to be original in my stuff.
Yeah.
But I see the appeal. Because there are some times where I'm just like, I won't be able to come up with anything that good as my starting point.
Well,
I really want to work from there.
And actually, the ideas I have for Wonder Woman and Buck Rogers both, I could adapt into my own thing. I don't have to write
it now. But now that they have the podcast evidence, anything remotely like that, you would get sued by Marvel and...
I haven't really said everything I was going
to
do.
Yeah, but now they would know.
Whatever.
The next thing you do that's remotely close to them, they'd be like, this is clearly what he was talking about, and it's a rip-off of us.
No, because it's not. It's not even remotely, because what I would suggest would change fairly significantly what's gone before. Well, okay.
Yeah,
and being true to a lot of other things, I suppose.
My lawyers will be in touch.
Shut up.
We're over time now. We should probably do it. So I hope that was an incredibly not useless answer, Kia. But
and thanks for your question.
Thank you.
And our apologies to everyone who didn't have their question.
And I know what the episode is going to be named.
Oh, good.
Because the producer told me, either yesterday or earlier today, because I suspect we're going to talk a lot about The Dark Knight Rises, and then she told me what this episode should be called, and I'm like, I'm probably going to have to go with that, so. All right, people, we will talk to you next week.
That's right.
Next week will just be have been 1 week, so you know I'm sorry. I know it annoys a lot of you when we do heavy non-hat things, but we had a lot of shit we had to deal with here. This is basically our therapy.
Yeah, this is it.
So
once a week,
if we don't get this out now, we will kill people.
Yeah,
so,
and we don't want that.
I'm not threatening you. That sounded like a threat. I'm saying no. It's important for us. For our sanity and our health and the health of our community. So please give generously, won't you? I always end up in a telethon.
I know.
In life, I do. But for 14 cents a day, you can stop me from being like that. No.
No. No, you can't.
All right. Ezzy's back, which means it's time to get the fuck out of here.
Time to go.
We love you guys, and we'll talk to you in a week.
In a week.
It's his house.
Please disregard the previous hour of useless audio. This has been a production of the Magical Talking Hat Podcast. If you would like to contact us, and I don't know why you would, please do so at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. All music is provided courtesy of Jay Underberg. More of his PodSafe audio can be found at podsafeaudio.com/J_Underberg. Thank you.